accession number 19625, reel 4.
So I'm walking down the road with another English soldier, and he was wounded in the shoulder. And I was wounded, and I was walking, so I wasn't one of the leg wounds. And we saw some old German dugouts at the side of the road. And the Germans started trying to show we two. One wouldn't the one show the one, but he showed the two, the Germans. They called me meaning, don't they?
Yeah,
it's too expensive with shells to fire at one.
Yeah.
But they fired at a couple.
Yeah.
But they started shelling us, and we could see they were waiting for us, because the first shells got was a fair distance from the younger about to mend a telephone wire from the front line to the reserve line. And he's going to get killed. And he's missing, believed killed. You see, things like that used to happen regularly, missing, believed killed. But every time a man was missing, he was just reporting missing, believed killed. He wasn't reporting missing, deserted, because you didn't know what had happened to him. So many things can happen to a person.
Yeah. A lot of people are obviously wounded by shrapnel bullets.
Oh, yeah.
What about mental illness? Did you find many people couldn't stand the strain? Did you find many people going...
We heard of people going in the army with shell shock, but I never came across a shell shock patient. All the time I was in hospital, I never came across. My wound was in hospital and that. I never came across a shell shock patient. It was a scarce. It wasn't as serious as it was with the American army. Really like that.
Yeah.
The American made a big thing of it. Psychiatry, you know.
Yeah.
Almost I've done. And I think there were more mentally unstrung shell shock. Call it shell shock.
Yeah.
Than what there was in the English army. I don't know. I didn't come across it much. Yeah. Once, a prone bear, very quiet spot, and the Germans were shelling, and a fellow went running around the trenches shouting, oh, I can't stand it, I can't stand it, I can't stand it. Well, they sent him. They sent him with somebody, sick, to our doctor, at brigade headquarters, actually, because we won't deal with him because he wasn't wounded. But he never came back to us, so he was never in to finish up in hospital.
Mm.
But that was the only time I ever come across anybody to show that he was frightened. Well, I was born being frightened. I was frightened many times, scared to death.
Mm.
I remember once we were outside the Ypres in a little fort. We went in the front line, we were outside, and just took this little fort over. We were coming down the road from Lamartine. We were marching down the road to the center. It was, yes, it was in Ypres, just outside Ypres. And this fort was on the road, but as we were going down this road, it was night time, about 12 o'clock at midnight. We then were in daylight down there, you then surely saw it in daylight.
Mm.
Incidentally, I came across, is this converted?
Yeah.
Oh, no, incidentally, I came across a very strange case. I was going down the line with a wounded soldier, and went down with him, and I also wounded, when I got wounded in the shoulder, and that was it. That was it. You know, I wounded four or five times, so I don't know really what it did happen. Anyway, I was walking down the country road from the front line trenches, walked down the communication trench and out onto the road because I was sufficient distance away from the front line trench for them to hit me with rifle fire. But they could hit me with shell fire, but not rifle fire, with breech.
Mm.
So I'm walking down the road with another English soldier, and he was wounded in the shoulder. And I was wounded, and I was walking, so I wasn't one of the leg wounds. And we saw some old German dugouts at the side of the road. And the Germans started trying to show we two. One wouldn't show the one, but he showed the two, the Germans. You follow me meaning, don't you?
Yeah.
It was too expensive with shells to fire at one.
Yeah.
But they fired at a couple.
Yeah.
But they started shelling us, and we knew we could see they were waiting for us, because the first shells got was a fair distance from the younger yard there, but they got nearer and nearer to us.
Mm.
So there was rage in the fire,
yeah.
And they knew some time or other, unless we took that down into some train somewhere, we might be hit or killed.
Mm.
So I said to this here Bill Corsia, let's get down in these trenches. So he said, yes, that's the best thing to do while they finish shelling. So we got down in this trench, and there was a German dugout there, and it was right down, deep down in the ground. So I told you what we'll do, Bill. I said, we'll get down on the steps of this dugout, and have a swim for an hour while he's finished shoving. He said, so we've had enough of it. So we got down the steps of this dugout, and we're just sitting down on the third or fourth step down below his feet down. He said, in the light at the back of us. And Bill said, so I think there's something down there. So I said, where? I said, this dugout at the bottom. I think I could see something. So when my eyes got used to the dark, I could see a fella wrapped in a blanket, not over steps, about 14 or 15 steps down. I said, well, go down, let's go both go down and see who it is. So when we got down, Kamerad, Lasse, you know what I mean? Kamerad, he was a German. I said, Lasse, yes, I'll give you some Lasse, sir. Got me a water bottle and I'll give him a drink of Lasse. So I said, Denkchen. I said, where are you wounded? He didn't understand me. And I thought the French weren't the wounded, he didn't know the German. The French were brassy, when they were wounded, they were brassy. I don't know what it means, but it must be wounded, yeah. Or injured. I said, brassy? Yeah. I said, where? And then I said, Avu. Where? I knew that, Mr. German. He said, after foot. I said, he wanted in his foot, Bill. So, shall I have a look for you? Can I have a look? Shall I have a look? Does he want bandage? Do you understand what I meant? He said, yeah. So I looked at the blanket, he came off his foot and into the foot. And his foot had done it long there. But the rest was gangrenous and smoked. So, how long have you been here? I said, Biffle Tug. Biffle Tug. He says, Zex or Zidden, or something like that. So I said, oh, Zex Tug, or Philip Tug, or Zidden Tug. He says, Zex Tug. I don't think he knew. You see, Andy Day had been there. So, I said, we can't do nothing, can we? So he said, you're not going to leave him here, are you? I went, oh, it really blew him. That would make you leave him here. So I said, what can we do? Well, he said, we can get him up on one leg and see if we can help him up the steps. Well, between us, we can lift him up the steps and perhaps he might be able to hop and we might cut a little branch off the tree and let him try to do what he can with it. So when we let him to the top of the steps, he couldn't move, you know. I mean, he got one foot. Just imagine off in the condition he was in. So anyway, I said, I'll tell you what to do, Bill. I said, it's only about a mile to the advanced dressing station. I said, let's leave him here in this change, and my friends will take somebody back from the dressing station for him, if they'll go. So when we set up, we did that. We walked about 100 yards down this road, from this hill, we got onto the road, and we came across the dressing station within 100 yards. We thought it was about another mile, but it was only 100 yards away. Told the medical officer about this fella. He said, well, I sent somebody to fetch him in. And they sent two stretcher bearers with a stretcher, and they fetched this fella in. So we were sat there and waiting to be attended to. And he looked at this fella's leg and put him around his neck. And he said to the stretcher bearer, take him, put him in that old down there, that little old down there. So, I said, what do you think about it? And I said, oh, he says, no, I can't do anything for him. He says, I can only bandage it up. He says, but it's no use. It's too far. It's right up his leg. Gangrene. So, anyway, we don't know the results from that, but of course, he was evidently a dead man. So, of course, we got our dressings put on our sundry wounds, and we got sent down to the Catholic clearing office, and that was that. Don't know where we got to.
Yeah, this is interesting. You obviously you spent 4.5 years facing Germans, killing them, or them trying to kill you.
Oh, I killed them.
And then And yet when you did, obviously didn't feel any hate towards that individual. Now, I mean, this impressed my grandfather now has been dead 15 years nearly. But I remember when I was very small and talking about the war, and something very, very similar, even he actually was a medical orderly, a stretcher bearer, happened to him. That impressed me that this kind of friendship in need between the two sides was often there.
You lose something when you're in a battle, you lose something. You lose your sense of reason. You lose your sense of what? Pity. You lose your sense of responsibility for what you do. I'll tell you an instant, it's true what I say. When I was in charge, I used to know this woman, machine gun, Lewis gun was a machine gun, one of the early machine guns, but very efficient.
Yeah.
we made an attack at a place called Campbell's on the front. And we thought we were going to have to capture the village. But when we advanced in open order, you don't advance in a month, but you advance in open order. 2 yards, or a yard and a half between first and all in a row, stretching.
Yeah.
The battalion probably covered about half a mile.
Yeah.
So that's how you attack.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you attack in a bunch, you all get killed in a bunch.
Yeah.
But if you're attacking out a yard and a half apart, only had one get knocked over. Wounded or killed. So we're attacking like that, and I've got my waist gun section with a jolly good gunner and four jolly good owls, five or six in the section. So they're handing the ammunition. The waist gun is a drum which holds 39 rounds.
Yeah.
And as soon as the drum was 8 horses, you took it off, put another one on, and somebody else started loading your first drum up again.
Yeah.
You had about 8 or 9 drums.
Yeah.
You had about 400 rounds, you see. And when one drum was exhausted, he handed it to one of the workers, 4 or 5, and they used to be loading the drums while the gun was firing. And that's how you work. This gun is empty, it's 39 rounds. You don't fire all the 39 at once. You go, that's a tap. Giving you some time to cool a little bit.
Yeah.
And we capture this village, but we don't have to capture the village because the Germans had run out of the streets and they're ready. It was a village very much like Stony Middleton. You know Stony Middleton in Derbyshire?
No, I don't actually know.
Oh. No. Well, there's houses on each side of the road and rock slips behind the houses.
Aren't you?
You're running up a ravine.
Like Castleton in places, it's a similar...
No, not, it's more so than Castleton.
Yeah.
You've only got one row of houses at that side, and one row of houses at that side. And directly at the back of the houses, there's a slip on each side.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
The same floors, in these two rows of houses, well, that's Stony Middleton. Now this Campbell was like that, what I remember of it. And the Germans were occupying all of the houses. So they didn't actually capture the village, but our artillery opened up on the village. Somebody must have rung up to our battalion headquarters that all the Germans had congregated in the houses and they were to blow the houses down. The shell fire. And every gun within maybe 3 or 4 miles opened up on this village. On these two rows of houses on the right of the road. And as they were blowing the houses down and hitting the houses with shells, the Germans were running out and up the road away. And there were probably 20 or 30 Germans in every house. Well, our gunner went berserk. You know, he did never have such a target in his life. And he had his work, all these Germans running away, and what he did for no man's business with that machine gun. They must have used 300 or 400 rounds upon them. And don't put this on here, it's not good for kids to hear it.
No,
it's any time. That's the thing that I don't repeat very often, but it was rare that it shows you that English people can also have no pity.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a situation, isn't it? Not the. But this is something I wanted to mention, you know, that you obviously. You've got to fight someone, and often said the Germans feel the same way, that they're caught don't particularly feel any hatred to individuals that they're fighting in the British state. Who do you blame? Who do you think is responsible? I mean, did you ever, while you were in the war, think about
everybody
this?
Everybody in the war, everybody in the First World War thought it was a politician before the war. I mean, it's true. Politicians do cause wars.
And were you bitter towards the Germans, or did you sort of blame your own politicians as well?
No, we blamed all the politicians for the war, our politicians, and then we blamed generously German politicians.
Yeah.
Germans blamed their politicians. You see, politicians, before that, were the politicians on the German side, and they can't agree to make a peace. They can't agree to give a little bit, and have a meeting. Yeah. Everything can be discussed around the table. Anything can be discussed, and things can be settled around the table.
Yeah.
Given reason.
Yeah.
I mean, we blame the politicians for the First World War, and I blame the politicians for the Second World War. This is it.
Well, the generals, did you think that they often made mistakes or wasted
lives?
Oh, they
had plenty of mistakes.
Wasted lives unnecessarily.
What about the Lord about this Lord that was in charge of? What about what he's done with Asia at Passchendaele?
This is one of the worst battles of the war, was it?
Oh, no. Passchendaele, I wasn't in that serious battle of Passchendaele, but it was terrible from first-hand knowledge. The ground was just a mass of shallows and mud and putrefying flesh. Dead men without arms and without legs. It was like that. I wasn't in the very bad battle of Passchendaele. I was in one battle of Ypres, which was sufficient for me. But I was never in the battle of Passchendaele.
Because the Passchendaele wasn't in Ypres. It was actually the same enemy.
It was on the top of the hill.
It was the third battle at Ypres.
Yeah. The Germans were on top of the hill. And the English was on the hillside trying to get up.
Because you'd have been in the second. Was it the second battle there? The second major?
It would be.
The first was right at the beginning of the war.
It was only a small battle as I was in the Ypres. It wasn't a big battle. I think it was the second one. I think it was just after.
Because the first one came with the expeditionary force held in there
early on, but there wasn't much of a battle But the third year, because it was one continuous battle, bear in mind it was one continuous battle.
Yeah, sort of big climax.
The Passchendaele was a climax. I think it was Sir Douglas Ager, who was Sir John Crane. I think it was Douglas Ager who was in charge of that battle.
I think so.
And he wanted to capture the Passchendaele Ridge. And under the conditions of the ground and the Germans, the number of guns they got, it was impossible to capture Passchendaele Ridge. All he captured was a mass of dead men. All that was laid there was dead men and wounded men. All he captured was casualties. He got plenty of them. About 200,000 British casualties in that third battle of Passchendaele.
And of course, there was a lot of. This was a regular thing that happened. You said that at Lewes this was also.
Well, at Lewes we captured Lewes and give it back again. And then at the Battle of the Somme it got us nowhere. It got us 20 miles and then we got choked back 20 miles. It was not a. There weren't great battles, there weren't great victories by no means. But the price was too heavy for the victories.
You know, you say you blame the politicians, did you at the end of the war feel any hatred towards the Germans as a nation?
How the army blamed politicians after the last war, the recent war, the last war, I call it. Mr. Churchill, who had run the war, was chucked out when he came to be a member. Well, his party was
defeated. 45, yeah.
They blamed the Conservatives. They blamed the politicians for war. And therefore, it's obvious that they blamed Churchill and his men for the war. Douglas was on as a politician. In the First World War, there was only a politician. What did it start with? A political murder at Sarajevo. Started with a political murder.
Yeah.
And the whole thing started with a rotten politician.
Yeah.
So we said, in the last war, didn't we say to our politicians, said to Germans, if you're going to Poland, then we're going to declare war, or you're going to attack Poland. But it's the politicians that said that. He didn't say it, I didn't say it, you didn't say it.
Yeah.
The politicians said to Germans, if you walk into Poland, we'll attack you. politicians said it, and in the end of the war, they could have settled it without making war.
So you don't feel any aggression or antagonism towards the Germans?
They're nothing to me. I don't know it. After the war, I felt what they'd done to the Jews, definitely detest
this. This
killed in the war and after the war.
Yeah, this last one, yeah.
6 million Jewish buddies did those guys of them. 6 million.
I think, though, isn't it? It's a different Germany, really, isn't it? Between the two wars. I mean, I think it's easy and right to condemn the fascists, the Nazis, of the Second World War, but in the First World War, it's not so clear cut, is it? It's not a political party.
No, the First World War, our king at the time was something to the Emperor of Germany. He was an uncle. Emperor of Germany was a nephew of his. But King George V, was it? No, it was King Edward the Seventh then.
Edward
the Seventh.
Yeah, of course, closely related at that time.
Yes, that's right, it was King Edward the Seventh. And he was the uncle to the Kaiser Wilhelm. You see, that was a political war because it started during the assassination of Carabino in Serbia. And from Serbia it swung back to all Europe was entangled with it. Politics.
Through the alliances in the country, see.
I don't know how many million people lost their lives in the First World War, but it must have been a terrific amount, because we ourselves lost 2 million.
Oh, yeah, and on the Eastern Front, the numbers that were lost were...
Count the Russians, the numbers of the last world war. I don't know, I've never seen any figures for the last world war. I don't know what the Russian figures were, must have been terrific. The German figures also must have been terrific. Mm. But look how many Germans and Russians captured and nobody's ever heard of them since. Probably a million. Or more. Look how many prisoners the Germans took and the Russians took towards the end of the war. They were taking rather giving prisoners as a child.
So, yeah. I don't know what the fit. I had some figures the other day about the numbers killed. I can't remember. I know that the Russians lost.
Well, I'll tell you, if you can tell you from the years in both World Wars, in the First World War in particular, the only one lot of people who were blamed for the war, and that was the politicians. Mm. Because the politicians from Sarajevo onwards, they were building up to a war, from Sarajevo onwards, they were building up to a war. You attack him and I'll attack you. You declare war on him and I'll declare war on you. And that's just how it went on until all Europe was embroiled in a war that nobody wanted. None in the street during the war. The ordinary man in the street never wants a war. What does he get after war?
Well,
nothing but death, wounds, pain and suffering.
Novelty. Obviously, I mean, it left Europe, the whole of Europe, victor and defeated, very, very poor.
Look here, the defeated in this last war, they're up, down and up and up, and we're on the down and down. Here's Germany prosperous, and look at us.
Mm. Nor do you think that there was a lot of nationalistic feeling in England, in Britain, you know, to go to war? I mean, you say you joined up in 1914,
Well, it's must very enthusiastic. Yeah, because I was, what should I say, I was young, daft, must have been daft to join up. And to come back from America to join up, I must have been daft to still.
Yeah.
I was nice and cushy in America, I mean, I could have stopped there, but I got patriotic all of a sudden.
Well, obviously people believe the propaganda in 1914.
Oh, propaganda can make you believe anything.
Yeah. They must have been in Britain, in Germany, in France, that there's got to be a short war, you know, Berlin by Christmas and
look, that began the year of the German general in North Africa, what was called him?
Rommel.
In St. Louis. Marvellous general. What a marvellous generalship, he won him all those battles. It was our generalship, they lost all our battles. Because it was our rotten generals. Not that Rommel was brilliant, because Rommel had his